The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The United States is completely pulled out of Afghanistan.
That is absolutely clear abandonment.
President Joe Biden made his decision.
He said, our message to those men and women is clear. There is a home for you in the United States if you so choose, and we will stand with you just as you stood with us. And then we left them to die, Hugh.
And now the entire administration is in question.
Who the heck allowed this withdrawal to turn into an emergency evacuation? The biggest debacle that we have seen in our history going back decades.
All of America watched this unfold in real time.
I knew it was going to be bad, but I don't think any of us knew it would be this bad.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. And on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me, please, on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. Monday evening, Major General Chris Donahue, commander of the Army's 82nd Airborne Division, stepped aboard a C-17 cargo plane at Hamid Karzai International Airport in Kabul, the last U.S. soldier to touch the ground in Afghanistan. The Americans trapped behind enemy lines, who thought they had one more day to escape the terror of the Taliban, well, they were mistaken. The thousands of Afghans who had helped U.S. troops were unable to get past the Taliban during the chaos of the past few weeks, watched their last hope lift off and vanish in the horizon. There's no question this is a catastrophic disaster. Americans left behind enemy lines see little hope of getting out safely. And the Afghans who helped and trusted us are now being hunted by the Taliban. National Review's Jim Garrity joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Jim, I never thought. I've been doing this for 30 years. I never thought I would find myself saying an American president left more than 100 Americans in the hands of terrorists knowingly.
Yeah, and we should point out when you say more than 100, Milley said, in the very low hundreds. Blinken said under 200 and likely closer to 100. But this morning's New York Times puts the number at fewer than 300.
And this does not, I don't believe it counts green card holders. This is, to me, an utter failure. Three different podiums in the Pentagon, the State Department, and the White House, three different numbers, which is citizens, green card holders, and allies, and we haven't got one answer. That's nine shots at one answer among the nine facts that we need and among the three facts we need, and we get nothing from these people. Nothing.
That is the most glaring and egregious broken promise, and, you know, I'm sure you have probably, you don't have to play the cut. I just have it written right in front of me.
Oh, let me play the cut. Let me play the cut. Joe Biden talking to George Stephanopoulos.
Americans should understand that troops might have to be there beyond August 31st.
No, Americans should understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will
stay. If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
And?
And if there are American forces, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
Pretty cut and dry, Jim Garrity.
Yep. And by the way, I also noticed that, like, Stephanopoulos is pulling teeth there. Biden did not want to give that pledge.
But he gave it.
Yeah, he did, but he didn't mean it. And everyone has given, or you know, I'd say not enough people. A lot of people have given Biden grief for that July 8th speech where he says the likelihood that there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely. But in that speech, Biden made a lot of pledges and promises. He said the drawdown is proceeding in a secure and orderly way. He said we provided advanced weaponry to the Afghan army. Of course, it's now in the hands of the Taliban, who are now flying our helicopters and hanging people from them.
Not confirmed yet, but yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it certainly looks like that. You know, it's hard to believe it'd be anything else. I don't think they're just going for a joyride, and this guy's just hanging down for fun. He said they will ensure they have the capacity to maintain their air force. That was a lie. We'd already cut support to their air force.
Right.
He said he'd assured Ghani that U.S. support for the people of Afghanistan will endure. We will continue to provide civilian and humanitarian assistance, including speaking out for the rights of women and girls. As your listeners probably know, women have been told to stay off the streets by the Taliban spokesman because the Taliban soldiers, quote, they don't know how to be around women yet. They haven't learned to accept women in public places yet. So you have to stay in your home until they're cool with it. It might take a while. He said, I intend to maintain our diplomatic presence in Afghanistan. We no longer have a diplomatic presence in Afghanistan. He said he's going to continue to work for the release of detained Americans, including Mark Freericks. He's still in Taliban custody. And then Biden said, we're going to continue to make sure we take on the Afghan nationals who work side by side with U.S. forces, including interpreters and translators. As your listeners probably know, Hugh, we've abandoned tens of thousands of them. He said, our message to those men and women is clear. There is a home for you in the United States if you so choose, and we will stand with you just as you stood with us. And then we left them to die, Hugh.
I want people to know that we take no joy in this. This is actually, Jim has been as outraged as I have been and as adamant in print for a long time. This is not political haymaking. We're genuinely ashamed of what the United States has done. I think we would say the same thing if Trump was in office. I know I would. What?
Some of us did.
Yeah. But I mean,
abandoning the Kurds, letting the Turks roll over them. Yes.
I don't think this is even closely comparable to that because there weren't Americans there. I'm talking about American citizens, Jim. And
the Kurds were the guys who helped us go after ISIS. You know,
they did.
Put their neck
they
on
did.
The line. And
I understand the argument, but I think there are different category differences here that we have to respect. This is a first time ever that we have left American citizens knowingly in terrorist hands. I also want to talk about, though, Phil, who called in the second hour, Phil, former Orlando, is a veteran. He's a Gold Star father. He mentioned his son, Staff Sergeant Robert Miller. I looked him up. That is a Medal of Honor recipient for conspicuous gallantry in saving his captain and squad in a province in remote Afghanistan in 2008. Every veteran, Jim, is just in agony because they had friends and countrymen bleed and die there, and we left them.
It is really hard to say to veterans. First of all, if you're a veteran listening to this and you're having a hard time, and Lord knows every single American would understand why you're having a hard time, please talk to somebody. Please call somebody. Please know there are people who care about you, and please know we want you to get through this as best you can. That said, I can't give them a good answer of what this was all for.
Go to townhallreview.com for the rest of that conversation. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst served in the United States Army National Guard for over 10 years, retiring as a lieutenant colonel. Like many, she was particularly disturbed by President Biden's exit from Afghanistan that included the loss of 13 service members a little over a week ago. I spoke with Senator Ernst on the Hugh Hewitt Show. It's a very tough time for people like you and for veterans, but especially for Gold Star families.
Yeah, absolutely, Hugh. And one of my dearest friends is a Gold Star wife, and she has been speaking quite loudly. She's been, you know, out talking on radio shows just that the sacrifice that her husband made in Afghanistan nearly a decade ago. And our Gold Star families are often those forgotten ones. They have sacrificed so much, and yet they fall outside of the normal everyday thinking. We're thinking about our wounded. We're thinking about the veterans that served because we can speak out. But we, you know, allow the memories of those Gold Star families, their loved ones, to just fade away. And we shouldn't ever do that because their sacrifice is greater than any of us. I am so thankful for all that they have given. But what I have not heard our commander-in-chief are those words. He has not said thank you to the global war on terror veterans. I haven't heard him say thank you to those Gold Star families who gave that ultimate sacrifice. Not a single word. I've heard him say thank you to the people that were working at the airport. But he refuses to acknowledge the wonderful job that our service members did over the course of the past two decades to keep our homeland safe.
So Senator, do you have any idea how many Americans we abandoned? I know General McKenzie said in the low hundreds. I've heard various estimates, but it doesn't tell us about green card holders. It doesn't tell us about SIV eligible people. But Americans, just pure Americans, do we know how many?
No, we don't, Hugh. And this is the really hard thing, is that when Americans are in Afghanistan, they don't have to tell our government that they're in Afghanistan. We may not know where they are. But of those that we do know are in Afghanistan, those that have been reaching out to congressional offices, the State Department, we need to have a full accounting of every American that is in Afghanistan. So we keep getting these numbers. Oh, you know, 200, maybe as few as 100. Well, folks, we need to know that.
There's a minimum number.
Too many.
I understand that they can't be certain about how many are there, but they can be certain about a minimum number. But from three podiums, the Pentagon, State, and the White House, repeatedly over 3 weeks, no one has given us a minimum number ever. And it's a dereliction of their duty to inform the United States. Now we're going to start finding out what's happened to these people. And so, Senator, what kind of accountability do you want from the president and his chain of command team at State, which is responsible for the fiasco and not getting Americans out, and the Pentagon, which is responsible for the plan or non-plan that went into this catastrophe?
Right. And accountability does need to happen. And that is something we need to focus on in the upcoming weeks. But I would say that right now we need to finish the evacuation. The administration left our own American citizens behind. So whether they were Americans, of course, those SIV recipients, the at-risk personnel, they're still in the country. So what we do need to do is continue the effort to pressure the administration on whatever authorities they need to make sure we continue and finish the evacuation. Whatever that is, we need to make sure we get those Americans out. Afghanistan is back to being a hotbed. Our global counterterrorism fight has changed significantly. We have to keep our eyes and ears open more so than we have in the past. And then we need to start reassuring our allies and partners around the world. The U.S. has suffered a heavy blow under Biden, President Biden. He has pulled the rug out from under our closest allies. And what they believe is that the U.S. is no longer a completely reliable ally. So then going back to your question, Hugh, once we have started on all of those things, once we get those Americans out, then we have to turn back to our leadership and start those investigations. We have to know who knew what when, why did it happen the way it did, and who the heck allowed this withdrawal to turn into an emergency evacuation, the biggest debacle that we have seen in our history going back decades.
Coming up, President Biden cannot hide from this one.
That is absolutely clear abandonment.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As the week progressed, it was clear that the Biden administration plans to put Afghanistan behind us, move on to other matters, well, they were not working. A cold-blooded effort to ignore the fact that the U.S. had abandoned people in a country controlled by terrorists plays into the narrative that this administration, this president, is lost. Its collective actions cowardly and shameful. I discussed the ramifications with the Washington Examiner's Byron York.
As you listen to Secretary of State Blinken speak over the last couple of weeks, it was also clear that they were never going to get every single American out of Afghanistan, who wanted to get out of Afghanistan. Plus, the thing that was really clear was that the entire operation was dependent on the goodwill of the Taliban. Ned Price, the State Department spokesman, tweeted, quote, "The Taliban needs to meet its commitments and obligations in Afghanistan on freedom of travel, respecting basic rights of the people, upholding its commitments on counterterrorism, not carrying out reprisal violence against those who stayed, and forming an inclusive government," which is kind of an Alice in Wonderland sort of position of the State Department. But here we are.
Byron, do you, I have not seen authenticated the helicopter hanging video. Do you believe it to be true?
I don't know. I've seen that video, and I have not seen any other evidence of Taliban actually flying the Blackhawks as opposed to standing around
right.
looking at them.
I do know what General McKenzie said, Americans in the low hundreds. Do you have a minimum number? I can't understand why we don't get a minimum number. I mean, low hundreds, how many is the at least? Is it 101? Is it 201? Is it 250? I've heard all sorts of different numbers.
Well, the Secretary of State, Blinken, said that it was no more than 200, maybe closer to 100. And here again, he was unclear, just as officials have always been unclear the whole time.
What and does that include green card holders, Byron? Do you know? I mean, these are not hard questions, but they've avoided them from three different podiums for 3 weeks. And it's three different questions, three different podiums, never answered once in 3 weeks.
Correct. And by the way, the allies, the whole allies question is unclear. Exactly what all of our standards are for the release for the evacuation of allies. Blinken, in his remarks, said more than 123,000 people have been safely flown out of Afghanistan. That includes about 6,000 American citizens. So we're talking 6,000 Americans, 117,000, perhaps loosely defined allies. I don't know. Somewhere between 100 and 200 Americans who are still there.
Byron, what is the idea on the Hill? I think we ought to take in all 117,000, vet them when they're here like we did after the fall of Saigon and let people stay. We have let this country down so badly. But what is the thinking on the Hill?
Well, I think that they want to know more about the 117,000 because, first of all, if you remember early on in this, we heard that there were 10 to 15,000 U.S. citizens in Afghanistan. And then it turned out, according to the State Department, that number was overstated, and it really was 6,000, roughly. And Blinken says those 6,000, with the exception of somewhere between 100 and 200, Americans have been evacuated. And by the way, on the 100, 200, they've been very squirrely on the question of whether U.S. forces simply haven't been able to get to them. They really want to leave, but we haven't been able to get to them, or they didn't want to go. It seems clear that there are some Americans who really want to leave that the United States was not able to get to in those frenzied last days.
Matthew Downer, I don't know if you follow his Twitter account, Hillsdale grad, Marine, University of Michigan lawyer, Hill staffer now, tweeted out, "Right now in Kabul are American citizens who waved their passport at gate after gate but couldn't get through. And now America has left them to the Taliban." I believe Matt Downer. I do not believe the three podiums.
That is absolutely clear abandonment. And by the way, it's a result of these terrible tactics, this terrible plan that the administration chose to actually get people out.
Yeah, this was by choice. It was all arbitrary and stubborn, but I'm getting a lot of angry email from people who say they are embarrassed and dismayed that no one has resigned. What have you heard about this?
Look, I think that as far as Republicans on Capitol Hill are concerned, you're seeing one desire to know, most of all, why weren't all U.S. citizens taken out of Afghanistan? Two, who were the 117,000 who were non-Americans who were taken out? Three, what in the world is happening with the billions and billions of dollars of weaponry and machinery of war that were left there for what is going to happen as far as the continuing relations, quote, with the Taliban.
In the first 7 months of the Biden administration, the media treated him with kid gloves. The president took only certain questions from specified reporters. They complied. But his actions in the Afghanistan collapse triggered a very different reaction. The major news organizations have deeply invested in that country for two decades. They know the people. They've seen the faces of the girls who've been allowed freedom for the first time. They've gotten to know their family. They have Afghan reporters that they have trained and grown to love. To see this happen to their friends, well, it's personal. Salem host Mike Gallagher begins his segment with an interview President Biden did with ABC's George Stephanopoulos, where the president made a vital promise that he would break less than 2 weeks later.
And are you committed to making sure that the troops stay until every American who wants to be out is out?
Yes.
How about our Afghan allies? Does the commitment hold for them as well?
The commitment holds to get everyone out that, in fact, we can get out and everyone should come out. And that's the objective. That's what we're doing now. That's the path we're on. And I think we'll get there.
So Americans should understand that troops might have to be there beyond August 31st.
No, Americans should understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will stay.
If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
And?
And if there are American forces, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
He lied to us. Of course he lied. And I don't know that he ever intended to get him out. He betrayed America. He betrayed these families. He betrayed everybody. As he's looking at his watch and going on and on about his son in meeting with these Gold Star families, I knew it was going to be bad, but I don't think any of us knew it would be this bad. We warned you. We knew it would be terrible. But could anyone have envisioned it being this terrible? Leaving Americans behind. The country is reeling. Hey, Democrats, what are you saying about your guy, huh? You happy there are no mean tweets? You glad about the terrorist implications that are now Afghanistan is overrun by terrorists, which is what we spent 20 years preventing. Now Afghanistan is overrun by terrorists again. Now they've got billions and billions of dollars of our equipment, our weaponry, our helicopters, our Humvees. We have armed the Taliban.
Coming up.
The American people deserve better than this. The American people deserve American leadership who tells them, here's what's really going on.
Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. While President Biden's angry lecture to the nation Tuesday declared this exit from Afghanistan a monumental success, he has at times blamed the timeline on everyone, often on President Donald Trump. Mike Pompeo was Secretary of State under President Trump. Pompeo joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. You've been watching the administration and the president respond, not respond, stumble, face plant for 10 days. Could you conceive of anything being handled worse than the last 10 days have been handled?
Boy, it's been really unfortunate. Unfortunate because the American people deserve better than this. The American people deserve American leadership who tells them, here's what's really going on, right? We've seen them make misstep after misstep in just the communications of this, right? First saying, well, we think we've got this many Americans. It's just been very confusing for the American people. We tried to make it always very straightforward. We had a couple missions there. One was to get our young men and women home when the conditions were right to do so. And second, to preserve the capacity to make sure that we were never attacked in the way that, oh goodness, 12 days from 20 years on happened in New York and in Washington and Pennsylvania. Those were our twin missions. We talked about them often. We used every tool of our power to try to achieve them. And these last 10 days, we watched the administration create an enormous amount of risk that resulted in the largest loss of death in Afghanistan in over a decade.
Let me review, Mr. Secretary, the Trump administration policy on Afghanistan. Troops under your watch reached their height at 15,000 in September of 2018. There were 13,000 in country at the time of the Doha Agreement in late February, February 29th of 2020. In January of 2021, when you left office, there were 2,500 troops in country and 18,000 contractors. Was he obliged by the Doha Agreement or secret agreement to get rid of those 2,500 or those 18,000 contractors by a date certain ever?
No, Hugh. In fact, we always knew that the numbers, the actual troop numbers, were conditions based. By the way, the Taliban knew this, the Afghan government knew this, the Hazaris knew this, the Northern Alliance folks in the north knew this. Everyone with whom we were having conversations, with whom we were trying to get to the table, understood that we were going to preserve and protect America's interests. And so the deal had a May 31st objective. It was conditioned on a series of commitments that the Taliban had made. It also had a series of commitments that the Afghan government had made about how they would behave as well. If those conditions were met, we were going to measure twice before we departed. And in fact, we wanted to get down as small as we possibly could, as fast as we could. You talked about the steps along the way. I think it was from 15,000 to 8,600, then to about 4,500, then to just over 2,500. Each time we measured, we evaluated the conditions on the ground, we consulted with the military, made sure that we had the security levels right to prevent precisely what we've seen happen there. We would have loved to have taken one more step before we departed, but the conditions simply weren't right. President Biden was under no obligation to do so, in the same way we were under no obligation. The Trump administration was under no obligation to do so. He made this choice. He made this choice to put first September 11th and then ultimately August 31st as the deadline.
In March of 2021, the president announced, President Biden, that it might be November before he completed the withdrawal. On April 14th, he announced it would be withdrawn by September 11th. Bagram was vacated on July the 2nd. On July the 8th, President Biden changed the departure date to August of 31st. Did that have any inevitability about it? Was there anything obliging him to leave and to change the date and to act the way that he did?
Oh goodness, no. No, there was no obligation. The obligation was to the American people and to securing America. No, there was no contractual commitment enforceable in any way, right? Some suggestion that they were bound up to this, or even the suggestion somehow that the reason the Taliban didn't attack is because we'd cut this deal and they were going to honor the deal. The truth is, we saw the Taliban break the deal during our time as well, Hugh. And when they did, we used American military might and American power to create the deterrence conditions, to create the space for us to continue to evaluate how to get drawn down as quickly as we could. This administration chose a different path. They put a date certain out there, not conditions-based. I guess I can't tell for sure, but 9/11 sounds like a date that has political and about optics rather than military and American national security at its foundation. There was no obligation to do that. I don't know where that date came from. He's referred to this May date that was in the agreement, but of course he didn't get out by May because he wasn't required to get out by May. And in fact, the loss of American life didn't happen in May. It didn't happen in June. It happened as they were conducting a withdrawal that hadn't adequately prepared for how to sequence to get the American people out, our equipment out, and to make sure that we had security all the while executing that mission.
Go to townhallreview.com for my entire interview with former Secretary Pompeo. Coming up, one candidate challenging California Governor Gavin Newsom in the ongoing recall in the Golden State does not back down on the race issue.
And Larry Elder has the courage to talk about that.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As we consider a post-COVID world, the call goes forth to a new generation of leaders in politics and policy. I'm Pete Peterson, Dean of Pepperdine's Graduate School of Public Policy. And for over two decades, we've prepared students to apply America's founding principles to today's policy debates. Are you considering graduate school? Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. California Governor Gavin Newsom is less than 2 weeks away from a recall vote that could send him packing. After the recall question, the voters choose who will replace him. To win, one only needs a plurality of votes. I've endorsed Larry Elder to replace Newsom, and Elder is well ahead of the pack on question two, should the voters choose to recall Governor Newsom on question one. My friend and colleague Dennis Prager, a longtime resident of California, friend to Larry Elder as well, discussed his candidacy with best-selling author Heather McDonald.
Do you believe that this man believes that if Larry Elder is elected, there will be Jim Crow in California?
Well, the amazing thing is that he admits that we don't currently have Jim Crow. I mean, if you listen to the California Education Establishment, the LAUSD, they're telling us that we still live under this regime of white supremacy, and that blacks are kept out of their rightful place there when they're qualified to get into banks and businesses and STEM fields and whatnot. So I guess we should actually be grateful for this admission.
And as you write, Elder has a different take. If, quote, a young black man is eight times more likely to be killed by another young black man than by a young white man, Elder told the Orange County Republicans, then systemic racism is not the problem.
Right. He is saying that blacks have agency. That should not be a controversial claim, that one can get ahead in this country regardless of skin color. There is, in fact, let's be honest, Dennis, the reality today in most institutions in the mainstream is black privilege, not white privilege. If you graduate from high school with a decent GPA, you're going to have every selective college in the country beating down your door, offering you a scholarship. That will continue out in the business world, where every bank, every corporation, every law firm, every STEM field is desperate to hire and promote as many blacks as possible. If you're a white male, straight white male, not so interested in you. And Larry Elder has the courage to talk about that.
I announced on my show that this woman, Guerrero, I've never been familiar with before, she's a columnist for the LA Times, wrote that Larry Elder twists facts with regard to black criminal rates. So I looked at the underline, meaning that there was a website that would back up her claim that he twists facts. So I clicked on it, and all I got were Larry's listing of the facts. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing. And the irony is, the facts come from the left's favorite sources, like the CDC. The CDC's own statistics tell us that black males between the ages of 10 and 43, or just blacks generally between the ages of 10 and 43, have a 13 times higher death by homicide rate than whites of those same ages. Homicide data does not lie. It is the gold standard in criminology. The bodies do not lie. And as far as the police being racist, I did some new number crunching for this piece. As of this year, a police officer is 870 times more likely to be killed on the job than an unarmed black is to be killed by a police officer. And yet the left constantly says policing is really safe, you know, notwithstanding that last September we saw those Dion Murray, a longtime felon, walk up to two L.A. sheriff's deputies, shoot them point blank in the head trying to assassinate them. And I crunched the numbers a little further, and I found, as of this year, a police officer's chance of being killed by a black suspect is 370 times more likely than an unarmed black being killed by a police officer. So the Black Lives Matter narrative that the police are the biggest threat to blacks is completely wrong. To be honest, blacks are a disproportionate threat to the police.
What was didn't somebody do a video asking people on the street, was it Ami or Will, asking people how many blacks they thought police killed a year. Did you happen to see that, Heather?
I'm aware of it, and the perception that the police are on this lethal rampage against blacks is an optical illusion. It is completely a creation of selective media coverage. Twice as many whites are killed by the police every year. Both the vast majority of both whites and blacks killed by the police are armed, violent, resisting arrest. But twice as many whites are killed, and the actual number of blacks killed a year, again, majority are armed and dangerous, is 250 a year out of a population of nearly 48 million blacks. What's the number of unarmed blacks who have been killed this year by the police in shootings? 4. Less than 1/100th of a black person is killed by the police per 100,000 blacks. I can't think of a greater lie than this. And yet the media has completely brainwashed people into believing this by never, ever covering the shootings of whites by the police.
That's correct. That's why they're so angry at Larry Elder, which is what your piece is about.
They are worried that, in fact, California is not a sure bet for the rest of eternity. There is a lot of money to be made in the race racket. People are terrified of black anger. They are absolutely terrified. And there is an enormous power in that victimhood. And for a certain number of people, just as being female is viewed as an accomplishment, which is ridiculous, so too is being black your main grounds of employment. It's your employment pitch. By being black, you can come into an institution and explain to the white people how oppressive they are. So there is a huge industry now in being black, just as there is an industry in being female and claiming that you're constantly harassed and oppressed. But Larry Elder wants to move us to a world where, in fact, people are viewed as individuals, where we treat talent with respect. We do not denigrate excellence or achievement or merit. We do not say it's a white plot to keep blacks down. We say everybody can succeed if they have good values at home, if they have parents that give them self-discipline, if they actually go to school, take their textbooks home and study. That is not going on right now in huge swaths of the inner city community, which is why we have academic skills gaps. And so Elder wants to speak to the liberation of personal responsibility.
Coming up.
The new person in charge of spiritual development at Harvard does not believe in spiritual development.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return. If you enjoy the Town Hall Review and you are a person of faith, let me introduce you to another podcast I think you'll like. It's the Christian Outlook, and in it you'll hear the leading voices in the Christian world engaging the issue of the day. This week, the United States abandons Americans trapped in Afghanistan.
It was the most abysmal failure of leadership that I have seen, honestly, in my lifetime.
We'll look at the Biden administration and the left's epic failure.
They didn't see al-Qaeda in the first place. They didn't see the collapse of the Afghan government. Now they missed almost everything in between.
Also, the long-term damage to the United States.
In recent decades, national belonging has been increasingly stigmatized so that it is an undesirable form of belonging.
And where it stands today.
We have seen at a time when racial equality has never been better, the advertising of racial equality is actually having never been worse.
To subscribe, go to ChristianOutlook.com. That's ChristianOutlook.com. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Chaplains have long played an important role in institutions. From the military to universities, chaplains counsel and advise on moral and spiritual matters. So leave it to a major university, my alma mater, to make a mockery of the position. Here's Salem host Charlie Kirk.
Seemingly unrelated, but it isn't unrelated. It all ties together to what we're talking about here, which is how we've allowed things to change and not challenge them. Harvard, right near the beginning of America in the 1630s, main purpose was to educate clergy. With some 17,000 Puritans migrating to New England in 1636, Harvard was founded in anticipation of the need for training clergy for the new Commonwealth. How far has America fallen? Well, breaking in the last couple days, the new chief chaplain at Harvard University, he's an atheist. The chaplain is an atheist. Four centuries after Harvard started as a beacon of teaching people moral goodness and coming in relationship with their creator, the new person in charge of spiritual development at Harvard does not believe in spiritual development. His name is Mr. Epstein, author of the book Good Without God. He will coordinate the activities of more than 40 university chaplains who lead the Christian, Jewish, Hindu, and Buddhist. Yet he himself does not believe in God. I'm reading from the New York Times. Harvard University applauds that their new chaplain believes in nothingness. An electric and engineering student says, Greg's leadership isn't about theology. It's about cooperation between people of different faiths and bringing people together who normally wouldn't consider themselves religious. Unbelievable. He's going to bring his evangelistic atheism to Harvard University. Greg was the first choice of the committee that was made up of a Lutheran, a Christian scientist, an evangelical, and other people of faith. We want to present a university as a vision of how the world could work when diverse traditions focus on how to be good humans and neighbors. So the head of spiritual development at Harvard University is someone that believes spirituality and the soul is a construct completely of its own creation. You want to see why America has fallen so far? Our Ivy League colleges used to be beacon of truth and goodness and beauty, and now they are believing in nothingness, nihilism, and power struggles. And they even go as far to say the person who's in charge of developing our students' spiritual outlook is an atheist. The top college in the world has a chaplain that's an atheist. That's not a Babylon Bee article.
Thanks for joining us in the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com. And sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin and producer Charlie Richard, David Bouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, Ben Brigman, Harley Idy, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.